From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In Major League Baseball, nobody wears the number 42. It's been retired forever. It's the number Jackie Robinson wore when he famously broke baseball's infamous color line. The first African-American to play in the majors, April 1947, for the Brooklyn Dodgers, with 42 on his back. It was an earthquake in a time when open racism still widely ruled. Now, 42 is the title of a new movie that looks at the boundary-breaking man and that first season. We're talking with the writer and director this hour on Point, Jackie Robinson, and the big new film, 42. You can join the conversation. Do you know the story? Is it American legend to you? Can you still picture the reality? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's a section of the trailer for the new movie 42 coming out this Friday. You've got to hear a racist fan, a racist Florida sheriff, a black reporter, Branch Rickey of the Dodgers, and Jackie Robinson.
You don't belong here, and you never will.
Get off the field.
Brooklyn Dodgers ain't changing our way of living.
Where are we down?
You are not the only one with something at stake here.
You want a player who doesn't have the guts to fight back?
No, I want a player who's got the guts not to fight back.
You give me a uniform. You give me a number on my back. I'll give you the guts.
Cue the timpani drums, the trailer for the big new biopic on Jackie Robinson from Warner Brothers. It's out this Friday. Joining us now from Culver City, California, is Brian Helgeland, Academy Award-winning screenwriter and director, writer of L.A. Confidential, Mystic River, and many others, writer and director of the new film 42, out April 12th. Starring Chadwick Boseman as Jackie Robinson, Harrison Ford as Branch Rickey, the Brooklyn Dodgers president and general manager who hired him. Brian Helgeland, thanks very much for joining us. Welcome to On Point.
No, thank you for having me.
What took you back to this story of all the stories that are out there, Brian?
Well, it was Mrs. Robinson, Rachel Robinson, Jackie's widow, was she's been trying to get a movie made for many years, and she was transitioning from one group of producers to trying to find a new set of producers, and Thomas Tull, who is the producer of the movie, contacted me because he had spoken to her, and it began this long journey of trying to tell the story and trying to satisfy Mrs. Robinson on the one hand and figure out how to do it on the other. And so it all started really with Mrs. Robinson.
And just to be clear, you're talking Rachel Robinson, the widow of Jackie Robinson, who has a major role in this film. She's with him as he goes through the sort of personal trials of taking this historic step and having to live with it in a very day-in and day-out way, and it wasn't easy.
No. I think what, you know, in passing, a lot, people think it was sort of stepping out on the field and was all over and done with, but it was a daily grind, you know. Baseball's a daily grind. You play every day in different cities and four at bats a day. And so, for both of them, and I always looked at it as about 10,000 small acts of bravery, that turned into one enormous, act of bravery.
You certainly have fans already for the film. Very prominent among them, the president and the first lady saw the film, and Michelle Obama said she was visibly, physically moved by the film. Here's the first lady, Michelle Obama, on 42.
It was the raw emotion that it just makes you feel after the experience. I mean, watching anyone go through what Jackie and Rachel Robinson did, you know, the outright discrimination they encountered at every turn, from the fans in the stadium to the airport receptionist, even from some of his own teammates. And you're left just asking yourselves, how on earth did they live through that? You know, how did they do it? How did they endure the taunts and the bigotry?
It is really something to imagine. You help us go back and do that. Here's the sound of Jackie Robinson himself. This was from a short essay that aired in 1952 on CBS's This I Believe program. Jackie Robinson, the man, not the movie here, reflecting on what it took for him to break the color line in baseball.
My fight was against the barriers that kept Negroes out of baseball. This was the area where I found imperfection and where I was best able to fight. And I fought because I knew it was not doomed to be a losing fight. It couldn't be a losing fight, not when it took place in a free society.
Jackie Robinson in 1952. It was tough when he first hit the field. Brian Helgeland is with us. He directs, screenwriter also for the new movie 42. In the movie, there's all kinds of resistance to this, including being viciously spiked in the middle of one game, high up on the leg by a runner's cleat. Didn't have to happen. Clearly a dig. His teammates want to take revenge on the opposing team. Jackie Robinson in the film 42 insists the game is too important to throw away.
Next guy up, you hit him right in the head, all right?
No.
Give me up.
No.
Give me up! Just get him out. Understand? Game's too important. Just get him out. Play ball.
You a tough man, Jake.
Let's get him out.
The black man who just wants to play, as depicted by Brian Helgeland in the new film 42. What's the most important message you wanted to get across with this film, Brian?
Well, you know, I think it's still an issue, racism. It takes on different forms, and I think he's such a heroic character. I think the average person might look at it all and say, "Well, I could never, you know, I'd never have the stage to do any of that from, and I could never be as brave as he was." But like I said earlier, it's little acts of bravery that add up to a larger one, and I think he was the beachhead, Jackie Robinson, that allowed the fight to have a place to stand and start from and move out from. And I think just for people to take, to carry on his sort of legacy and continue with something that is society struggled with forever and it continues to struggle with.
It was chosen as depicted here and in fact for very kind of specific reasons. I mean, a poor kid out of Georgia and then Pasadena, but a young man who grew up poor, father wasn't around, bunch of kids in the family, but he was a very successful athlete in many, many arenas and in many, many sports before getting here. Played big in college, was an officer in the U.S. military during World War II. Interesting kind of history there as well. When Branch Rickey at the Brooklyn Dodgers reached out for Jackie Robinson, it wasn't just a good ball player. He was looking for a certain kind of man to play this role. What was he looking for, Brian?
Well, in the Negro Leagues, there were certainly better pound-for-pound baseball players. And he was a great ball player, but there were better players. But he had...
Satchel Paige and more.
Yeah, Josh Gibson. Mm-hmm. And, but he had he was such a strong character, Robinson. And I think he had self-confidence, and he knew who he was as a man, and carried himself that way. And ironically, he was the most likely guy to fight back. And
yeah.
And that's what the guy you ask not to fight back, you ironically need a guy who's fully capable and willing to fight back.
Because he had a track record. He had run into trouble in the military when he'd been asked to go to the back of a bus. He'd refused. There'd been actually a court-martial there. I mean, he had a history of not taking this stuff lying down. You've got Harrison Ford with him here in the movie 42, talking with him about that, talking to Jackie Robinson about what he's going to face in the majors.
They're going to do anything to get you to react. Echo a curse with a curse, and they'll hear only yours. Follow a blow with a blow, and they'll say, the Negro lost his temper. Your enemy will be out in force, and you cannot meet him on his own low ground. We win with hitting, running, fielding. Only that. We win if the world is convinced of two things. That you are a fine gentleman and a great baseball player.
Well, there you go. Harrison Ford as Branch Rickey. He really turns in a great performance. Also, very fine from Chadwick Boseman, who plays Jackie Robinson here. You know, when it was all over, he was Rookie of the Year in that first year on the Dodgers. So, I mean, it may have been tough, the taunts from the stands, but somebody was looking out for him, Brian.
Yeah, no, I think the irony is the pennant race and playing on the field was a refuge for him in a way, because he could concentrate on that. And whereas it would put a lot of pressure on most ball players, it was almost a respite for him, I think.
This was 1949 Count Basie with Did You See Jackie Robinson Hit That Ball? The big movie 42 is out at the end of this week. Brian Helgeland is the director and screenwriter. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Did you see Jackie Robinson hit that ball? Did he hit it?
Yes!
And that ain't all. He stole home.
Yes, yes. Jack is real gone.
Talking this hour about 42, the new movie out this Friday about Jackie Robinson breaking the color line in Major League Baseball in April 1947. And how that story looks today, we're talking with the director, screenwriter of 42, that was Robinson's number, Brian Helgeland, with us from Culver City, California, Academy Award-winning screenwriter. Of course, he wasn't entirely alone. Rachel Robinson, his widow, still survives him. Here's a little bit from the movie 42, where Jackie Robinson, played by Chadwick Boseman, and his wife Rachel, played by Nicole Beharie, talk about, well, he's heading off to practice. She's saying, hang in there, Jackie.
Promise me you'll write.
When have I ever not written?
I want you to know I'm there for you, even if it's words on paper.
Ray, in my heart.
You're getting close now, and the closer you get, the worse they'll be. Don't let them get to you.
I won't. God built me to last.
God built me to last. Jackie Robinson's being played there in 42. Brian, how much of the dialogue did you take out of the historical record from what was really said by Jackie Robinson, by Ray Robinson, by Branch Rickey?
Well, movie dialogue is always distilled down from larger things. But I tried to find a historical backup for almost everything I wrote or any scene. I talked to Mrs. Robinson. She read the script. She said I wouldn't use a phrase like that. I would say it more like this. There are accounts, there's a speech Leo DeRocha makes to his team.
When they were threatening to walk off if a black player was brought on?
Yeah, and I paraphrased it from what DeRocha himself described, what he said in his autobiography. And so I went to that source. Red Barber wrote a book that recreated a lot of dialogue. The great thing about that year is that everyone who touched it one way or the other, or not everyone, but a lot of people wrote books about it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a wealth of firsthand accounts, and you have to, everyone sort of paints themselves heroically, so you have to take that into account. But there's a lot of stuff out there to try to piece it all together.
It was not all heroic. Some of the reception was pretty rough. Jackie Robinson was not entirely unfamiliar with that, as you depict in his own autobiography and other histories show us. He'd run into plenty of racism in the United States of that era. Here's a little bit of the man himself, the historical, Jackie Robinson, 1957 interview on CBS's Meet the Press. And he answers a question here about whether African Americans should have been patient on civil rights issues.
Patience is fine. I think that if we go back and check our record, the Negro has proven beyond a doubt that we have been more than patient in seeking our rights as American citizens. Be patient, I was told as a kid. I keep hearing that today. Let's be patient. Let's take our time. Things will come. Seems to me that the Civil War has been over about 93 years. If that isn't patience, I don't know what is.
The real Jackie Robinson in 1957, laying it right down there. Brian Helgeland is with us, director and screenwriter of 42, the big new movie. Joins us from Culver City, California. And David Steele is with us right now from Washington, sports columnist for AOL Sporting News. David Steele, welcome back to On Point. It's great to have you. Have you seen it? What do you think of 42, David?
I have seen it, and I loved it, probably even more than I expected to, which probably deserves an explanation. I was a little concerned because of the magnitude of the topic and the personal feelings that so many people, not so much Americans overall, but Black Americans in specifically.
What had you worried going into the theater as an African American with this, you know, great, big, almost legendary story coming up on the screen? What were you worried? What was your sensitivity, David?
The sort of Hollywood's history sort of proving this out a little bit, that stories like that sometimes get watered down for a bigger, a more majority audience. The real hero, Jackie himself, might get pushed a little to the background behind a character like Branch Rickey, especially since he was played by Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
And that maybe some of the bigger points would be missed, and it's sad, and it felt bad to be that cynical and skeptical about it. And so, but I did bring that into the theater. But I was really open to being surprised and really thrilled by it. And by the time the movie ended, and so many people in the screening I was at applauded at the end of it, and I did too, because I thought they did a tremendous job, Mr. Helgeland. I think you did a tremendous job. You deserve a lot of congratulations on getting the story right. And it's a story that I grew up obviously adoring and paying so much attention to and learning more and more as I came along. And it's the kind of story that inspired me to get into this business in the first place, to be able to tell stories like Jackie Robinson's in full and in its totality. So to see that movie really meant a lot. And to see it done so well meant a lot as well.
I said earlier that nobody wears 42 anymore. Well, generally true, but Mariano Rivera still wears it. Why does he still have it on his back, David? How'd that happen? He had it before they retired the number?
They grandfathered in the players who were still wearing 42 when baseball retired it. And he's the last player to still be wearing it. And for the most part, the players who were wearing it specifically chose it because of the significance of it, and because it, you know, tied them sort of spiritually to Jackie Robinson. And Mariano Rivera has that same feeling about him. And I think there's a lot of emotion about this last season of his, because if he does hold on to his retirement plans, you know, he'll be the last one, and he really did wear it for that very reason.
Nobody except that dwindling few, except on the day April 17th, when everybody in the major leagues wears it in remembrance of that day when Jackie Robinson first stepped on the field. Here's a little clip from the film 42, where Philadelphia Phillies general manager Herb Pennock, played here by Mark Haralick, calls Dodgers GM Branch Rickey, played by Harrison Ford, threatens his team will boycott the game if Jackie Robinson plays in Philadelphia. Doesn't want an African-American on the grass there. Rickey has an angry reply. He'll hear the Philadelphia general manager first.
I'd like to know what it is you think you're trying to prove.
You think God likes baseball, Herb?
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
It means someday you're going to meet God, and when he inquires as why you didn't take the field against Robinson in Philadelphia, and you answer that it's because he was a Negro, it may not be a sufficient reply.
Harrison Ford letting it rip as Branch Rickey in 42. Montreal plays a big role in this story. Let's go there. Bernie's calling from Montreal, Canada. Bernie, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom. Great show.
Thank you.
I remember as a kid seeing Jackie Robinson play for the Montreal Royals here in Montreal.
This was the farm team for the Dodgers.
Exactly, exactly. And this could only happen, in my opinion, that he could break into Major League Baseball playing first in Canada, because Canadians don't think like Americans. He received with open arms here.
And you actually remember him on the field?
I remember meeting him once. He came up to visit at a camp that my father was a member of. It was a left-wing thinking camp, and he was a perfect gentleman. He was adored in here in Montreal.
And do you remember the comment in the stands, or was it there on the fact that he was?
There wasn't any comments. He was received, like I say, with open arms. He was welcomed here.
Your father, you said he was a left-wing camp. Jackie Robinson's politics are interesting in and of themselves. He was Republican in many ways until he early on. Later on, went to Hubert Humphrey. What got him into your father's lefty camp?
He just came up there. His organization invited him to come up one day. I think it was a Sunday afternoon. He just happened to come up. It's up in Laurentians here, just outside of Montreal, north of Montreal. And he was, again, received very welcome because... we're not that prejudiced, certainly on the color bar anyways.
I appreciate your call, Bernie. Brian, the Branch Rickey was very strategic in a number of ways, as you portray him in this film, in who he chose and how he chose to introduce Jackie Robinson to the world. What about the Canadian difference when it came to race prejudice at that time? Do you know if that figured into his decision, knowing that Jackie would come up through the Montreal Royals?
Yeah, I think that the Dodgers had a couple of AAA teams, and I think his reasoning was to send him up to Montreal, where he thought he'd be welcome, and also that they played in the north generally.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't come too far south, the Royals. And so it was Montreal, I think, was a safe haven, and their schedule of play kept him up north, which he hoped would be a little friendlier than down south.
Down south could be rough. David Steele will remind it even before he gets on the Dodgers of, you know, what people were up against at that time. And it is not an exaggeration here to show just... But it's still shocking today when you see it, David, to show just the sort of straight up, in your face, very harsh racial prejudice. Of course, we're talking the mid-1940s. Even so, I don't know about you. Maybe you just live with that awareness all the time. I think for some younger Americans, this may be a moment when they say, are you kidding me? It was really like that?
Yeah, I believe that a lot of people who are going to see this are going to be shocked by that, but... Again, that's where the authenticity of the of those scenes are so important, because those are parts of the story that, you know, I mean, there's, you know, the Jack Robinson stories, like a lot of historic tales like that, are told sort of in shorthand, and a lot of details like that aren't always put in there. It's sort of said generally he faced a lot of racism, but you don't actually see specifically the scene at the airport in New Orleans and the scene in Florida when they had to, you know, bolt out in the middle of the night, and mm-hmm. just all the little things, the people yelling things from the stands in every single city, and even the details of this is why he had to start in Montreal instead of another city. And these are the concerns they had when the Royals played in southern cities. These are little things that make up a part of the bigger picture that illustrates this so much better than really it ever has been on film before. And so that did mean a lot. And that's what was one of the things that was exciting about, that the airport story got in, and riding the bus all the way to Florida got in.
Where he was not allowed onto the plane.
And also Wendell Smith got in. That was exciting. I was excited as a sports writer.
Wendell Smith, of course.
Wendell Smith played such a big part.
Right, the black sports writer who played such a role in Jackie's kind of introduction to this whole world. And there you saw what your doppelganger on the screen, David. that could have been you. Brian, I was struck at how really the most important part of the film is just a kind of catalog of responses to the breaking of this color line. I mean, you take us into how Branch Rickey handled it, how Jackie Robinson responded to the taunts and the applause, how black audiences, often segregated from the white audiences in the stands, responded, how his white teammates responded sort of as a group and then one by one. I found that the most telling thing in the film, Brian, and you clearly paid a lot of attention to sort of unpacking the psychological journey that every participant took in crossing this line.
Yeah, there was a line written about Robinson that said he changed the world and refused to let it change him. And I think, as I said earlier, he knew who he was. He didn't, there was no crisis of confidence. He knew who he was. And what he did was he forced everyone else to question and face who they were. And if racism and segregation were ideas that you could sit around and talk about, all of a sudden he put a face on all of it. And he's standing out in front of thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, and you can boo him or you can cheer for him. You can support him as a teammate or ignore him. But all of a sudden it's in your face and you have to. His great ability, I think, was he forced people to face up to who they were. And that was by putting a human face on the whole thing.
Here's a moment in the film where they're playing in Cincinnati, and Pee-wee Reese, the great Pee-wee Reese, is from Kentucky, just across the river. The crowd is by no means friendly. Lucas Black here playing Pee-wee Reese. And in the face of a lot of menacing sound from the stands, he runs over across the diamond, puts his arm around Jackie Robinson. I guess this is based on a historical moment. The shortstop, the great shortstop, Pee-wee Reese, signaling to the entire audience what his attitude is here, and thanking the white shortstop, thanking the black Jackie Robinson at this point on first base, thanking him for being there.
Thank you, Jack.
What are you thanking me for?
I got family out there from Louisville. I need them to know. I need them to know who I am.
Hey, number one! You playing ball or socializing?
Playing ball, Unc.
Play ball! Don't
let it get to you! Playing ball. Maybe tomorrow we'll all wear 42. That way they won't tell us apart.
We got that kind of gauzy baseball magic over here, but something really important at the heart of it, David, there. I mean, even Pee-wee Reese, and again, I think that this comes out of actual history, but as Brian Helgeland has it, him saying he wants to know he wants his family to know who he is in a time when people are changing, David.
That scene maybe is one of the ones that really blew me away the most, because I've known that story almost feel like my entire life. I've always known about the Pee-wee Reese putting his arm around Jackie Robinson part of the tale, knowing that friendship lasted the rest of their lives, and that it actually took place in Cincinnati. And it really wasn't until watching the movie that I put two and two together that was the closest major league city and ballpark to where Pee-wee Reese grew up in Kentucky.
Right.
And to know that was part of the whole tale, that was the crowd that he was doing that in front of, and what it meant to him, to his family, and to his whole understanding of what was going on, that was a really riveting scene. And again, the fact that it was rooted in reality and in history really, really meant something, and that's one reason it's so effective.
It was a different time, it was a tough time, and Jackie Robinson crossed the color line right in the teeth of it. David Steele is with us from AOL Sporting News. Brian Helgeland's here from Culver City, California, director and screenwriter of the new movie 42. It's out at the end of this week. Here's Good Rockin' Tonight from the soundtrack. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Hey, sister, ain't you glad we got the news? There's good rockin' tonight. Hoy, 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 hoy. There's good rockin' tonight.
Talking this hour about the new movie 42. The movie's out this Friday. It's about Jackie Robinson breaking the color line in Major League Baseball in April 1947. 42 was the number on his back. The director and screenwriter of the film, Brian Helgeland, joins us from Culver City, California today. David Steele, sports columnist for AOL Sporting News, is with us from Washington. Mal's calling from Dedham, Massachusetts. Mal, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You know, I just wanted to say, it's funny you told that story about Pee-wee Reese. My dad was a lifelong Brooklyn Dodgers fan, grew up in Park Slope, and he used to point to that moment as being a moment where kind of the prejudices that they had broke down, and everybody kind of in Brooklyn accepted him. But he told a story one time about in his Park Slope neighborhood, there was a Cadillac dealership, and actually Jackie Robinson is there, and I don't know how true this is, but he used to tell it all the time. They saw him in the window. He was sitting down. He was going to buy a new car. He was with a couple of Brooklyn Dodger buddies, and there was a friend of theirs who was a Yankee fan from Brooklyn also. And you know, he had mentioned that, you know, that they had stopped using kind of bad language talking about black people, but the Yankee fan was still kind of keeping up that same language. And it's just interesting, when they met Jackie Robinson, my dad said he was so gracious, and his friend who was a Yankee fan just couldn't get over it. He was stammered and was shaking his hand. He just couldn't. He just said, "Oh, Mr. Robinson, you know, thanks so much for saying hello." And he said, "You know, here he is with. He thought he was with his wife, and they're buying a car. And he just took the time out to say hello." But it was interesting how, on the ground, you know, kind of one by one, how ideas about people can change. And he said his friend was, you know, different after that. You know, things had changed, even though he was a Yankee fan. So they still hated him for that. But they the fact that he was, you know, able to kind of get over his own prejudice.
Yeah.
Just something he always used to tell us about.
One by one, no doubt, in the stands, or gosh, what a story, in person. I mean, of course, a lot of it, David Bryan, and thanks for that story, Mel, but a lot of it was just driven by Jackie Robinson's talent at baseball itself. Here's the sound from the 1955 World Series, Dodgers, New York Yankees. Jackie Robinson steals home. The Dodgers, of course, ended up winning that series.
With pinch batter Frank Kellard at bat, Robinson dashes for the plate. It's close, and umpire Summers calls him safe on the daring maneuver.
A lot of daring maneuvers. He could steal a base like nobody's business. You'll see plenty of that in the film. Thomas in Chester, South Carolina, you're on the air. Thanks for calling, Thomas.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. What do you know, Thomas?
I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. I have very fond memories of going to Ebbets Field with my father. And I have very clear memories of arguments at the kitchen table in Brooklyn with neighbors concerning Jackie. Many of the comments were racist. Regrettably, some of them were parts of my family. But my dad always accepted Jackie, lectured his friends, neighbors, and relatives about the necessity for racial integration. And I can honestly tell you that I was not exposed to any of these conversations until my dad took the initiative. And it was just a very long process for people in Brooklyn to get used to him playing, but an awful lot of kitchen table conversations such as my dad's took place, and I think it's very beneficial.
So in a way, for you as a young man, a boy, there was your learning curve on race was maybe built around Jackie Robinson's story.
I did not make that clear, absolutely, without question.
You know, take us back, Thomas, because what was it around the kitchen table? You said there were openly racist reactions to it. Were people just saying, "We just don't want a black guy out, you know, with the Dodgers"? Just as simple as that?
That the N-word was used.
Yeah.
Let's be clear and honest.
Yeah.
And it was quite nasty. But my dad and others took up for him. New York was the largest metropolitan area at the time.
Yeah.
And I think it spread across the country. I think there were a lot of kitchen conversations like the one I experienced as a youth.
Thomas, I really appreciate your conveying that. I mean, David Steele, put yourself in that picture where, you know, it just wasn't talked about and then until it was. And Thomas, as a young man, taking it on board, hearing his own father stand up for this. I mean, Brian Helgeland lays it out in many ways, but here's another one in which one man's move, or maybe two with Branch Rickey, resonate through a society, gets all kinds of rethinking going on, David.
Yeah, I think it once again illustrates the power of sports, and particularly at that time, baseball, in this society to be at the forefront of change, that a lot of the things that have happened in the evolution of these sort of attitudes took place on the, you know, within the context of sports, and that's the biggest one. There have been little ones before that and little ones since then, but that was kind of the biggest changing point of them all. And I can imagine there were probably a million conversations like that. I know that the generation of my grandmother, they developed their own Rudy interests based on, who was playing where. I mean, I know that my grandmother and my great aunt and a lot of the people in her family, they were lifelong Dodgers fans. They did, spend a lot of time in New York, but a lot of them grew up here in the D.C. area and in Maryland. But they were lifelong Dodger fans. They were also lifelong haters of the Cardinals. A lot of it was because of that incident that was illustrated in the movie where Jackie got spiked at first base by a Cardinals player. And they've told stories about those games. And, 30, 40, however many years later, the L.A. Dodgers are now playing the St. Louis Cardinals in a playoff game. And they're rooting like crazy for the Dodgers and hoping that the Cardinals go down in flames. So, it's little moments like that, like sort of person to person, family to family, household to household, neighborhood to neighborhood, that were sort of reeducated about what this country could become now that this breakthrough had taken place.
In the movie, Jackie Robinson is always trying to figure out exactly why Branch Rickey is doing this. Rickey, played by Harrison Ford, says again and again, look, it's for money. I'm going to make money doing this. Robinson, played by Chadwick Boseman, never quite convinced. Later on in the film, Harrison Ford shares some of his own personal history in the role of Branch Rickey about what motivated him to come around to bringing the first African-American into the major leagues.
Why? Why'd you do it?
I love baseball. Given my whole life to it. 40-odd years ago, I was a player coach at Ohio Wesleyan University. We had a Negro catcher, best hitter on the team. Saw him laid low, broken. Because of the color of his skin, and I didn't do enough to help. I told myself I did, but I didn't. There was something unfair at the heart of the game I loved, and I ignored it. But a time came when I could no longer do that.
Harrison Ford playing Branch Rickey in 42. Brian Helgeland, do you have evidence that Branch Rickey was that idealistic about the move?
Well, I think... he's a complicated guy, Branch Rickey, and I think he carried this memory of this player with him for many years, but didn't do anything about it for a long time. And I think he also had great timing, Rickey, and I think he wanted to have the team be a success. He wanted to make money at it, but he wanted to do the right thing also. And World War II, post-World War II America, really gave him the chance that he was waiting for. The African-American soldiers coming home, mm-hmm. having fought, having defeated Hitler and Hitler's racial supremacy ideas and all that. And the country, as it stepped into this new role of superpower and all those things, had an identity issue itself. And Rickey, I think, realized that the time was right. He wasn't going to make a bet he couldn't win, I don't think. But not to take anything away from him, but he thought the time was right, the country was ready for it, and he made his move when he thought he had a shot.
He, of course, he was also criticized. I mean, he would pull players up from the Negro Leagues. He wouldn't compensate them for that. Many people have said that the end of the Negro Leagues sits on Branch Rickey's shoulders as well, though maybe it was inevitable once everybody started playing in the major leagues gradually. I mean, David, he did this when others did not. Jackie Robinson, I saw this film at a press screening just down the street from Fenway Park, the famous great ballpark in Boston, where Jackie Robinson had also tried out in 1945 and been rejected. Of course, the Red Sox didn't come around to black players until much, much later, 1959, very late. But there was Rickey right out front doing it. I've got listeners online saying it's a Jackie Robinson story. It's really the story of Branch Rickey equally. I don't know. How do you look at that, David?
Equally, I think, is too strong. But I don't think you can diminish what Branch Rickey did, because somebody had to do it. I think the movie illustrated why he was the one who could do it and why he was the one who would do it. And just knowing the history of this entire story and of both men, and from watching the movie, especially with that that story about the one of his Branch Rickey's players from way back, it sort of gives you the idea that if Branch Rickey hadn't done it, it might not have happened for decades later, because nobody else in baseball wanted this to happen. And the tryout with the Red Sox, which pretty much history is recorded as being a total fake, you know, bogus tryout. You know, there weren't many of those, and most of those were like that. And Branch Rickey was really authentic about it. If he had not done it, who knows when this might have happened, how many lives would have changed, and whether Jackie Robinson might have ever been heard from in that context.
Let's go to Larry in Washington, D.C. Larry, thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say, first and foremost, this is just a great opportunity. At a time, you know, how appropriate at a time where Major League Baseball and African-American participation is way under 10%, at 8%.
Yeah.
This is just a great opportunity. And also in the fact that, you know, Mr. Steele talked about it, his family and, you know, how they related to teams. I mean, that's almost dead in our community. It's basketball, it's football. And those were our great heroes back in the day. You know, the Hank Aarons that followed, the men that followed Jackie, obviously, the Bob Gibsons. So this is just a great, in my eyes, a great opportunity for youngsters to see a man who, quite frankly, really was a very strong-willed man. I mean, he had shown defiance long before he got to the Dodgers, even when he was in the Army. And yet he was able to put that defiance aside and go on a field with thousands of people that didn't want him to be there and a team that didn't want him to be there. And despite that, despite the fact he was very intelligent, very accomplished, great athlete, he put all that aside. I'm sure a lot of people who screamed at him, his intelligence was far beyond whatever they had thought. His accomplishments were far beyond what they had ever done. And yet he was able to put that aside. And that, to me, is what made him so great. And again, I just hope the youngsters get a chance to see this. Young black kids who, you know, don't play baseball, who have lost contact with what men did so that they could have opportunities, so that they could make money. And again, I also wanted to follow up with Branch Rickey. There's not one accomplishment that black men or women have made without the support of people of other colors, of white people. You just didn't do it by yourself. You needed help. And for that, I give a lot of thanks to Mr. Rickey as well, because it was men like that and Pee Wee Reese that made others look at the mirror and say, man, we're really terrible. We can be really terrible. And that's basically really what it was.
And let's,
thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
You bet, Larry. Thank you for calling. And let's not be that anymore. George Vesey, who's been our guest here many times, wrote baseball, he said, history of baseball. He wrote, every black politician, every black rap singer, every black athlete of today, every black citizen vaguely getting by comes through Jackie Robinson. But without the incredible stress that wore Robinson down before his time, he died in 1972. He's just 53 years old. Brian, you chose just to look at essentially one big season here. I mean, some before that, but essentially one season. You didn't take it on through his political kind of evolution. You know, when he started out conservative because he had seen Dixie Democrats and not liked that. But he became pretty, well, he was even supportive of the sort of black power demonstrations at the Olympics later in the 1960s. You decided not to take it on. Why just that season, Brian?
Well, I mean, part of it the scope of it all is too big. I mean, you could make a movie about him before baseball. You can make a miniseries about him after baseball.
Yeah.
But, and I found that in the passage of time in a movie is an enemy of the drama. And it's very hard to get dramatic momentum going if you keep cutting ahead years down the road, which is, to me, the bane of a biopic. And 1947 is the seminal year, I think, in his career. And to keep the movie drama going, I selected that as the time to focus on and hope that it illuminates the man who preceded it and points towards the man who leaves that year. But yeah, it's a choice of dramatics and storytelling.
David Steele, do you still feel the debt?
Absolutely. I wouldn't be here doing what I'm doing if he hadn't done what he did. And to refer to the previous caller, all the basketball players, football players, track athletes, lacrosse players, hockey players, everybody who's able to do what they're doing now, even if it means they're straying away from baseball, they couldn't have done what they're doing in their sports or their walks of life without Jackie Robinson doing what he did.
David Steele, sports columnist for AOL Sporting News. It's always great to have you. Thanks for joining us, David.
Thanks very much for having me.
And Brian Helgeland, director, screenwriter of the new movie 42. It's out the end of this week. Brian, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll go out with Sister Wynonna Carr and The Ball Game, featured in the soundtrack of 42. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Life is a ball game. Each and everybody can play. Yes, you know Jesus is standing at the home plate.